This is a question from Rajesh Nair Doha through live streaming. Samatva, as discussed by you, is well understood. But how does one remain in equanimity when one is already in the middle of a situation? To make this a lifetime habit, what practices should one resort to? My dear Rajesh, I remember you very well. I also saw an email from you and I was about to reply, but the trouble is time. Listen to me carefully, not only Rajesh, but all of you in my friend. See, if Samatva as discussed by me is well understood, there should be no problem. First of all, what is the place you give for knowledge in your life? This you please let me know. If we have understood Samatva, this Samatva covers the entire life and the impacts of the world in our life. I will again come to the same point. Do you agree that the moment we wake up, life starts from us? The moment we become awake, that is the time we become conscious of our body and the senses. Suppose you are lying on the cot with face upward. The first thing you will see is the roof or the mosquito net. That is the first interaction that we have. Then we may look at our own body and the cot. Then we get up, we touch the floor, you see the walls, go to the bathroom. See, the interaction starts. Though we call it an interaction, so far as we are concerned, it is an action. It's an action from, by, in, for, of the senses. So do you agree life is an extension and an expression from us? Nothing comes to us from the world. We interact with the world. The world doesn't interact with us. Suppose you are a human being and I am, then you can interact with me like I am interacting with you. But when we say the world, generally we avoid reference to the living beings. In all these interactions, our senses remain constant. The five senses alone interact with the world. And in all these interactions, neither the senses go to the objects, nor the objects come to the senses. This is a point of contact. Even when the point of contact is there in touch, don't you think in all the senses it is contact? The light rays should reflect from the objects, they should touch the cornea. The smell should touch the nostrils. The taste should touch the tongue. The object should touch the skin. Everything is contact bound. But the contact is at the level of the senses. Not 1 millimeter away from the senses. Though they are all contacts, in none of the contacts any object enters inside the body. This point you have to be careful about. I will continue to speak until all of you understand and lift your hands. Say we have understood. Anybody who has not lifted the hand? See, you are all feeling, then when I touch the book, it is any different. It's not different. The same thing is happening when an object is seen. The light rays reflected from the object, they touch the cornea, then only the image is formed inside. So our senses are the point of contact for all interactions. This much is clear. And these interactions instantly produce two reactions or responses in the mind. They are pleasant and unpleasant, happy and unhappy, sukha and dukkha, pleasing and displeasing. Now the samatva is addressed towards these two. So will you agree with me, if samatva is addressed to these two mental responses, the twins of the mind, Does it not cover all interactional life? Yes or no? Again, you have to lift your hands. When a child is born to you, you are happy. When you pass in the examination, you are happy. When somebody dies, you are unhappy. When you get a demotion, you are unhappy. When you get a lottery ticket, you are happy. If you don't get it, you are unhappy. When you make profit, you are happy. When you incur loss, you are unhappy. When you meet a friend, you are happy. When you think of an enemy, you are unhappy. So in terms of the mind, the twins are exactly the same. And we are addressing our samatva towards these twins. Because these are the only resultant outcomes of all the interactions that we have. A samatva addressed to these two will cover the entire life and world. Is it clear or not? Huh? Because these uneven responses are constant in you, if you have adopted samatva, will not the samatva practice also be irresistibly constant? Am I clear? Huh? Huh? If you are clear that mental resultants are uniform throughout the day, throughout life, if you have adopted the principle of evenness towards them, will not the evenness also become irresistibly constant in you? Because you have adopted it. See, I am having sukha. Instantly you will think that sukha and dukkha are mutual and complements. Therefore, when I get dukkha, I should not be worried. Because dukkha is what brings sukha. And sukha leads to dukkha. So if I have any preference towards sukha, it is foolish. If I have any dislike towards dukkha, that is also wrong. Because without dukkha, you cannot have sukha. And with sukha, you will certainly get dukkha. So sukha is more a reminder of dukkha than otherwise. And dukkha is an inviter of sukha. So what is the dislike about sukha? I mean dukkha. And what is the preference towards sukha? Am I too fast? Huh? See, when you have sukha, this sukha has come because you had dukkha earlier. If earlier dukkha was not there, you will not get the present sukha. Again, the present sukha is leading to dukkha. Then is it worth attaching ourselves to? And are they not irresistible in life? So do you have to work for them? Huh? Then what do you have to work for them? Only one thing, remain uniform in both. So this uniformity becomes a natural compulsion, an irresistible pursuit, once you understand the subject. Yes or no? Huh? Once you understand the subject, what is the attraction in sukha? Because it will fleet off. And the sukha has resulted from dukkha. So dukkha is dear to us because it will bring sukha. And sukha is not so tasty because it is driving us to dukkha. So the dislike towards dukkha vanishes and the like towards sukha also naturally vanishes, provided you interact both these with wisdom. Yes or no? You tell me, I will again explain it. You should be true to your knowledge. See, you cannot have sukha without preceding dukkha. So when sukha comes, why are you unduly delightful? Because it is leading you to dukkha. So it is only short living. And you don't have to create or cultivate sukha because they are in the very nature of your life. Our life is a progression, or it is coursing through sukha dukkhas. So this samatva practice, if you have understood it is concurrent with your sukha dukkhas. Concurrent with your sukha dukkhas. It is coexistential with them. Am I clear? So will not the sadhana by its very nature, Rajesh, be constant in you? But you may feel, in spite of this being constant in me, sometimes I am subdued by sukha and I am depressed by dukkha. I also agree. Be depressed. What is the wrong in it? And be delightful. But understand that both are in the nature of life. So, I would like to put it. The heaviness and density of sukha and dukkha will go on reducing progressively. The density of sukha will reduce and the density of dukkha will also reduce. See how beautifully the point is argued. Do we ever strive for dukkha? But don't you have dukkha? In the same manner, you don't have to strive for sukha. You are not striving, you want to avoid. Even then you have dukkha. In the same manner, sukha also will be had. So what do you have to strive for? Neither dukkha nor sukha. If at all you have to strive for, it is only to remain uniform in both. So the entire life calls for only one effort. And that effort is to remain uniform in both. Because both are constant, uniformity also will be constant. Every incidents of sukha and incidents of dukkha will automatically oblige you not to be affected by them. Will it not? Huh? Yes or no?
Yes.
Why are you not reacting? See, your face should be lit like a full moon. Because you don't have anything else to do. Sukha-dukhas are irresistible. They are not coming to you out of an effort. An effort to avoid them will be useless. An effort to invite them will be redundant. So you are always with sukha-dukhas. Then only effort that you will do is neither to be depressed by dukkha nor to be subdued by sukha. Give him that. Jaya, why don't you keep these things ready? You know that it is a live streaming. What is it that you are all looking for and showing the finger here and there? Every day. It is not my requirement. Here I am reading the question and answering. When there is a question from the audience, you must always give them the mic.
Swamiji, this particular question I am asking, it is directed to you. Like, you know, all of us have gone through bereavements in the family and it really hurts us. Well, it hurts very badly. You must have lost some of your family members. You know, that time how did you put that samatva in your life? I mean, I would like to hear from you, Swamiji.
See, I burned the dead body of my brother with whom I was close. My brother was a mischievous brother. I generally don't remember him so much now. He was very mischievous and he was punished repeatedly by my father. I was helplessly watching my father. He was punishing him like a tyrant. Because I was young, if it was now, I would have told my father. Without offending him, I would have resisted. I would have expressed my concern and all that. So helplessly, I was looking at the whole thing. These have no impressions in my mind. I cannot say I had a father even. Things have gone so off. Because of this brother, I had suffered quite a lot. Because we were close and I used to follow him and all that. So there was a lot of grief in my mind. But grief was part of my life. He was my brother. I happened to be his brother. So some of the mischief, some of the rascalishness, all these things, I was victimized by it in my young days. Then in Calcutta, it so happened that I had to cremate his body. He was taken to the hospital. He was lying in the hospital for 2 months. Everybody expected him to die, but he did not. He recovered. One day he became so desperate that he walked off from the hospital. My brother had a lot of influence and closeness with the doctors, so they registered a lot of protest. Finally, he was brought back there as if he did not go. Then finally we got him discharged. He came home. He came back. He was admitted to the same hospital, to the same bed number 72. I was alone there. I was new to Calcutta. I did not know what to do. He was admitted at what time, I cannot say. He went to the bathroom. Then I said, I will also be there. No, don't be here. You go away. So he closed the door. Luckily, he did not bolt it. He was not coming out. When I opened, he was lying in the bathroom. Ambulance was called by one of my brother's friends. He was taken. I was alone in my flat. So I was waiting there for some time and I went away to my flat. See, I am a person with a strange thing. I will not like to miss anything, do everything. So I admitted him in the hospital. He was there. Then at midnight I went to the flat. Next morning when I came, his bed was outside. The people from my village started crying and crying and crying, but I don't think I shed a drop of tear. But when I was cremating him, just before setting fire, the dead body was there, a lot of mantras were chanted. So when I looked at my dead body, I felt a little sorry. I used to imagine this sight and imagine my contact, everything, etc. I am not somebody who forgets something. I remember. I remember, remember, remember and dissolve the memory. Have you heard? I never try to escape from a memory. I will not like to. I will digest the memory and dissolve the memory. So now and then I used to remember, he used to call me from the bed. Maybe it took about a year for me. Now my brother, this incident and this death, etc., they are just like writing on air. Sometimes I feel, is it right that I say I had a brother? Is it right that I say I have my parents? I have heard in my young days, Vedanta is something like the whole world becomes a dream. I feel that it is a dream. Otherwise it must have had its impact in me. Am I answering your question? Not very much, but this much you can say. That 1 year, Swamiji, you must have gone through some mental torture. No. I was calling it to memory, and sometimes the memory would be a little producing a little tension or impact. That's all. Then after some time I will leave, I will bring back the memory again. I will live with the memory, and my habit is to digest memory and dissolve it. I don't know at what point of time I felt that this is real spiritual wisdom. The spiritual wisdom is to remain unaffected in all instances of life. Unaffected. Now you can be unaffected when somebody does something harmful to you. But suppose you happen to do something harmful to others, to remain unaffected will be very difficult. But that also has to be done. I am a speaker. And during speaking, if I say anything by virtue of which somebody is hurt or a wrong statement is made, it has a lot of impact in me. Don't think that speaking is easy. I am handling a very, very delicate subject. So I always wonder, do I have any slip? Sometimes slip occurs, very, very rarely. When some slip comes, if at all, it is not because it is a slip. So far as I am concerned, it is not a slip. But it has an impact. At least others will say, Swamiji, you said this. But it may mean that. Naturally, I have said, if people say it has a certain impact, it may be. So I try to digest the impact within myself. I have said it, I cannot take away the word. So whatever impact it has, I have to digest it. So I spend my time digesting, until at last the impact has become like writing on wall. I mean writing on water. So what, coming back to the point, this samatva, if you understand it properly, it cannot but be irresistibly operating in you. Because you are only coursing through sukha-dukhas. And you don't have to strive for either sukha or dukha. Then what do you have to strive for? Sukha has come, I should not be deluded. Dukha has come, I should not be subdued or suppressed. So the feeling that I should not be, becomes concurrent with you. I would say it is just like taking in breath and pushing it out. See, when you have taken the breath, you have to push it out. When you push it out, you have to take it in. There is a little strain in you, but that is natural. So the heaving will be there. In the same manner, the mental heaving will be there. And you have no alternate to sukha-dukhas. Can I expect to live any time in the world without sukha-dukhas? And do you have to invite them? If you push them away, will they go? So the only solution will be, you will have to be in harmony with them. So my dear Rajesh, have you understood it now? See, you don't have to do any sadhana. This understanding itself makes you a constant sublimating factor. Have you understood? Ye theek hai ya? It is a lifetime habit, means it cannot but become a habit. Because what will you do in this world? You cannot increase sukha-dukhas, you cannot decrease them, you cannot avoid them. There is no alternate for it. Just like breath, just like heat radiating from your system, sukha-dukhas also radiate from your mind. So by a process of understanding, this samatva becomes concurrent in your life. Until at last, you don't feel the necessity for it. As sukha-dukhas are there, so you are uniform towards them. We can feel our limbs and body with our own brain. So in realization of soul, are we feeling our own brain? You are a doctor, Mahesh, but even then I don't believe when you say, I can feel my brain. How can you feel? You can see another's brain. How can you feel your brain? Nobody is feeling the brain. Is there any consciousness in you by virtue of which you are becoming aware of only the grey matter within the skull? Then we don't see the brain and we don't know what it is. We only have a cognition or a sensation which is ranged by the body. See, you close your eyes and sit. Will you follow me when I say this? You close your eyes and sit. How is it that you know that my range of existence is perimetered by the body? Is my expression clear? See, you have a range of existence, and that range of existence is earmarked by the bulk of your body. How do you know it? So our sensation is of the mass of the body. The body en masse is sensed by us. That sensation is really the self. That is the consciousness that you have, by virtue of which you sense your body. See, somebody comes and touches me at my back. I know it. Even otherwise, Even otherwise, see, wind comes and blows, and when it touches the body, anywhere in the body, don't you know it? So you are aware of, you are sensing the whole mass of your body. That sensing the mass is actually the self, the consciousness. Huh? How do you say it is brain? Brain is here. But you are feeling even the length, foot. We are feeling the whole mass of the body. Are you not feeling the mass inside? How do you feel the mass? The heat is present, air is present. So that sensation which you get of the whole body, that sensation is produced by this consciousness and the self. Its modality may be brain. That is the biological detail. But actually, you, anybody closing the eyes and sitting, I know that I am present in the whole body. So the whole body sensation is what we call really the self. That which produces the sensation of the body, inside as well as outside. I don't know how to put this question, or rather, during the process of realization, where does our brain stand? This question I cannot answer. Because brain is not my subject. I don't know where is the brain, what is the brain. But I know what is this sensation, what is this awareness, what is the mind, what is the intelligence, etc. Shall I proceed to the next question? Kindly advise us some tips on how we can awaken our dormant inner potentials, potentialities, spiritual. What do you mean some tips? There is no tip about it. See, I simply answer this question when I ask you. Do you agree that you have a mind? It is given by Janardhanan. You have a mind, is it not? This mind produces umpteen thoughts. How many thoughts it has produced? Crores and crores and crores. And is the mind lessened or exhausted? Huh? So any kind of a source which produces millions and millions and millions of products and still remains equally fresh to produce further, what is its potential? Why don't you reflect upon it and agree that mind has got infinite potential? Intelligence is all the more. Intelligence is all the more. So to understand the infinite potential of our inner personality, you have to reflect upon what the mind does. See, it coordinates seeing, hearing, thinking, understanding, smelling. How many different multiple functions it does? What is the capacity of the mind? It reflects the whole universe spread out before you. The mind is seemingly inside the body. But inside the body, it reflects the whole. A plain mirror does not do so. So it has got infinite capacity. You compare the mind with any other product of the world. Which is greater? Huh? Mind is greater. You reflect upon it. A few yoga postures one should practice daily for mental and physical well-being. I don't know whether I should start demonstrating yogasanas. I think either you go to a yogic teacher, asana teacher, or you go to a good physiotherapist and ask him to tell you what are the sets of exercises by which I can remain healthy. I am taking exercises for the neck, shoulder, for the chest, stomach, hip, thigh, knee, calf muscles, ankles, foot, hands, elbow, wrist. I am taking exercises. So I think you can go to a physiotherapist or you can go to a yoga man. But the yoga man should know what is a little bit of anatomy and physiology. Then only the instruction will be good. Then I think that will be the best. Aditya from Bombay should come here. Then he would have taken it to all people. All of you are too old and useless.
Jai Guru Samiji. I heard or I read it that Samiji advised if you have a back pain, that's 12 times Sashtanga Namaskaram. I have been continuously doing for the past 1 year. I don't have any back pain.
Good. Our doctor N.K. Das has something to say because I used to quote him. You say what you have to say. This is Dr. N.K. Das speaking now. He is a cardiologist, a very reputed one from Jamshedpur.
It's probably 3 years or more. One Swamiji said, just doing, you know, what do you say? Just lie down and stand up. Okay, this is what, if you do it, like these people are doing that Sashtang Pranam, and do it at least 12 times, then you will not have any discomfort. And from that day I have been doing. Of course, in ashram I am not doing. But whenever I am in Jamshedpur, I always do it. Even in the hotels, when I go for any meetings also, I do it. And it's a very good effect. I think everybody should follow it.
Similarly, a little pranayama means breathing exercise without touching the nose. Without touching the nose. If at all I demonstrate any pranayama, I do it only without touching the nose. There is a way of regulating your breath by utilizing this portion. Not this way. Here. Increase this volume a little. See, normally I am breathing, you won't hear the sound. The breath should become thinner and thinner and thinner. It can become very light. Now when you start doing a regulated pranayama, say, you can regulate the breath by making it flow through this portion. I don't know how. Maybe an ENT will have to explain it. I don't know. But I do it. So these are all some of the simple things which you can do and very, very effective. And at least try to do this. Make your breath as thin as possible. See, when I showed you in a pronounced manner. It is not even flowing. I cannot even feel the sensation of flowing. When meditation becomes absorption, the breath will become very thin and uniform. when the breath becomes uniform and thin, the mind also becomes light and uniform. There is an inextricable relationship between breath and mind. As is the breath, when you get angry, when you become passionate, then also, when you become jealous, then also. So the emotion affects the breath. So naturally, when the breath becomes even and uniform, the mind also will become so. All questions are over? Whether the breath should be consciously made thinner? You can put a little effort. When you put an effort, what happens is the mind becomes absorbed in that process. So it acts on the mind and the thought process becomes lesser and lesser, and no disturbance will be there. Because breath is an automatic process. You don't attend to it. When you start paying attention to it, that attention itself is very, very fine than attending a piece of article like this. See, I can move from here, but when I handle my breath, it is so invisible and so thin. Only by a process of sensation through the nose you can tackle it. So the mind becomes more focused and there is a thinning down of the mind function also. Am I clear?
Swamiji, for people following other religions besides just Hindus, do they have something similar to our spirituality through their texts, or is it kind of the same? Or would it be different but the same central idea?
See, the moment you say other religions, every religion is a system of morality and ethics related to the concept of God. So all religions have got focus on an external, unreachable God. That is what every religion is. Suppose in addition to their religious thoughts, they have something like yoga, spirituality, etc. It becomes the same as ours, because we are the mother of spirituality. Say, we had an international yoga day. Where from did this yoga come? India is the source of yoga. Because yoga is an exercise or a pursuit, making use of your body, applying your body, and the whole exercise is restricted to your body without an external gadget as in a gymnasium. So there are only two things in this world. Either a religion and religious practice connected to an external invisible God, or a spiritual practice solely based upon your own body, mind, intelligence and soul. Am I clear? No. Why am I not clear? See, the question is that you are asking me, are there other religious practices similar to yoga, etc., that we have? That is your question, is it not?
It's not necessarily related to the practices more than the actual... Okay. My question was, do other religions similar to ours... Do other people following a different religion have a similar spirituality concept that... You could say we do.
That I cannot say. They may have, in addition to their religion, spirituality. Otherwise, their religion does not incorporate spirituality. Their religion is only this, related to an external god and religion, and asking you to do this and to do that. See, there are religions which tell you kill and eat, and while killing you sanctify the murder. Today I wrote. See, some religion believes in killing goat, and before they kill they sanctify the killing by chanting some mantras, tantras, etc., some prayers. They say, we are killing in the name of our god, and you should not eat flesh or meat without having been killed in that manner. You don't know? Huh? I think Islam clearly says that you should not take meat of a goat which is not killed in the Islamic manner. Halal. So then, this is their religion. And they speak of heaven. Other religions also speak of heaven. Say, take Christianity for instance. They say, all the people who are doing religious good, they will be rewarded. What about the others? They will be damned. Damned where? They don't know. And then, if there is a reward for good deeds, there must be a reward for bad deeds. So where is the reward given? And what happens to that? They have no answer. So many of the other religions are blunted. Hinduism has got a peculiarity, that is, whatever we do is spiritual, philosophical and religious. There is nothing in religion which does not get spiritual sanction and philosophical sanction. Otherwise it will not be accepted by us. Does it give you any answer? See, one thing I always say, that in Christianity, the philosophers of Christianity are different. They are educated people, they are literary people, and anybody can be a philosopher. In Hinduism, real philosophers are saints and sages. We don't accept philosophy taught by a simple professor. We have got Indian philosophy in Indian universities. They are only professors. They don't practice this philosophy at all. Say you take Bertrand Russell, Kant and so many other people, they have
coming back to the subject of Samadva, I think, you know, many a time you have explained what Samadva is. We have listened to it, I think, 10, 20, 30, 40 times from you. And yet, this question keeps coming up again and again. I think, from my personal experience, first of all, you must have a strong desire to want to achieve Samadva. You must tell yourself that I want to be like that, first. And secondly, you must, through your experience, observe your mind's reaction. Because Samadva is a state of mind. And I think if you can achieve Samadva with the small things of life first, the little things, and then you realize how beneficial is this to be even-minded. Then through time and effort, you can achieve the bigger things of even-mindedness. That's my personal experience.
Even if you achieve the bigger things straight away, there is no harm.
Not so easy, Swamiji. And one more thing, Swamiji, about this religion thing. I believe that in Islam, Sufism has certain elements of spirituality.
Yes, I'm not sure. There is a great saint in the Christian community. What is his name?
Francis
Assisi or so?
Francis of Assisi.
He was one, I was told. I don't know anything about him, but I have said. such people will be there. You are saying that we must have a desire and a decision, etc., to practice samatva and all that. My role too is to explain it in such a manner that you are left with no option not to have it. I don't think you can have any life without samatva, because it will be miserable. It will be miserable. You know, I am amused that why people are not following bhakti and spirituality. Because even a very small dose of spirituality will make you happy, comfortable and relaxed. Devotion is so exhilarating. Why is it that people are not practicing devotion? It is so beautiful, so nice, so sweet. I can only say they are not fortunate. Here a family comes. The wife is very pious. She comes prostrates. She tries the child. The child was refusing to prostrate. But recently he prostrated himself. The father rarely comes. He will always be standing. He will not prostrate. By doing so, tell me who loses? Suppose he also does a prostration and develop a little bit devotional humility and simpleness. Don't you think the system will become softer? The mind will be more pleasant? But he doesn't realize it. What can be done? Simply leave him to himself. He brings the wife and the child. Stands like this, witnessing the whole drama. What can be done?
I have one question. I can understand everything, and I'm also doing everything, all my sadhana and all. But how one knows that we have attained the self-real? Have attained that self-realization. What is the ultimate during meditation? How will I understand that I have attained that?
You attain it, then you will know.
But what will be the experience?
Yeah, obviously, is there any... You have not attained it now.
That doubt will not come in case if I...
You continue your effort, and whatever your questions are, you ask, get clarity. My Baba was telling me one day, when you get realization, how will you know? She said that a pregnant woman carries on the load of pregnancy. When she has delivered, do you have to tell her that you have delivered and pregnancy is over? In the same manner, when you get realization, you will know I have got it. It makes you so free, relaxed, no more question, no more worry, no more anxiety. You know Mala, who comes from Nigeria now? Nairobi. See, it's a treat to look at her. When she goes on chanting the shlokas, etc., she will be closing her eyes. She comes and does a lot of service. One day I told her, Mala, what shall I talk to you? You never ask me anything. Whatever I speak, generally she will listen to. She has no question to ask. She has nothing to seek. When I look at her, it's a very, very contented and fulfilled state that she has. She doesn't have a question like what you are asking now. It's very interesting. So I told her, Mala, what shall I tell you? I have nothing to tell you. When I look at you, you also don't ask me anything. Whereas other people say, Swamiji, you don't talk to me, you do this, you do that, you are not blessing me. Somebody was telling me, Swamiji, 17 years have passed since I took Diksha from you. Will you not bless me putting your hand on my head? Is it something to be asked?
Oh, Swamiji, 17 years have passed. Oh, he said so much, a very good length of time. Then the next point was, will you not? Will you not? Acha, the person, I cannot understand. Is there any point in this? I only have one statement to make. Love is not to be demanded. Either you warrant it or deserve it. My statement to God is this. My dear God, I am very pleased with you. I remember you, I speak about you, I try to explain who you are and all that. I am very, very happy. I am very happy doing so. Whether you are happy with me is your lookout. I am happy. I also say that some people say God is, some people say God is not. But I somehow like to say that you are. Whether you are or you are not, it is immaterial for me. You may be or may not be. But I am happy to think that you are. It is my business. Whether you are or not, it is your business. But I am happy thinking that you are. It makes me feel comfortable. Suppose you are not, therefore what? But I am happy. I say, please don't come to me and trouble yourself. So many people are calling you. Please go to them. I will not give you the headache of coming to me. All these things I say. What do you say about it? What do you say, Vinod? At the same time, here is a person, will you not bless me this way and that way? People who are living with me in this ashram, they want me to additionally bless them. What is this? I don't understand. They are here only because I bless them, I have accepted them, then they have come. Still they say, I am here, but you are not blessing. See, in astrology there is something called Kaimadruma Yoga. Even if they have millions of dollars, they will say, I don't have money. There is another Shashimangala Yoga. What is that? They will not have much money, but they will say, I am extremely happy, I have enough and more. So it is a psychological situation. What can anybody say? So love is to be deserved. Never beg for it. Warrant love from others by your behavior or by your quality. This is what I have to say. But some people are like that. What can be done? Poverty of the mind. This is one. Another is, it is a great privilege to be non-expecting. What? It's a great? Sri Krishna says, the sukha that comes to your mind when it is non-expectant, it is indescribable. In Mala's case, it is very, very amusing, delightful to see. Very sensitive, she will run about a lot. And she writes our reports also very well. You must have seen in Vicharasedu. She will not, during so many days of stay with us, she has never asked me one question or anything at all. For so many years she has not asked. And she is very, very happy and contented. I don't think women are so happy as she is contented, because her husband is so... You know, she went away from America after having been there during Swamiji's presence. When she heard that I was unwell, she said, I am restless here, shall I come? My husband tells me, why don't you go again to the ashram? Swamiji is not well. Tell them what happened.
Natha Swamiji had gone to USA, as many of you know, and he returned on 12th May. That is, Swamiji's birthday was 13th May, and Natha Swamiji, Namrata and Padmakar, they returned on 12th May. I think Swamiji fell sick on 15th May. Mala had gone to USA from Nairobi. He went to USA along with them. And she was there serving Nutan Swamiji throughout this whole trip of 5 weeks or more. And then had just gone back and returned to Nairobi. And within few days, she heard that our Swamiji here is sick. So, when an email came, she has written to me that I'm very much restless here, thinking how you all are managing. Shall I come? And while I was thinking this, my husband, husband's name is Sridhar. Sridhar from office has phoned me and said that should you not go at this time? So, Ma, what shall I do? So I replied that we will manage. You have just now gone. No, I had written that while I am reading your email, Mala, I am only wondering how beautiful minds you have and your Sridhar has to be telling you to come to the ashram after not having you for nearly more than 5 weeks. You have just returned and he is asking you to come here again. We will manage. You need not come. Swamiji is better now. Yes, this is something. See, March, Swamiji went to Delhi. Swamiji and myself, we went to Delhi. She came from Nairobi to serve Swamiji. Then she had just gone back. Within 7 days, she flew to America to be serving Nutu Swamiji. And they had gone back. And before that, in November, she was there again in Delhi to serve again. She comes from Nairobi to be in Delhi when Swamiji visits Delhi. So in March we had told that, will you be able to come every time? We feel very sorry for Sridhar. You are coming away, leaving him alone. I think that's okay that you don't come, because April you will have to travel to US. He said, please don't tell me like this. And she nearly cries. She said, please don't tell me like this. I want to come. And Sridhar also allows me to come. And during my operation for 2 months, she was in Delhi along with me in the hospital, along with Namrata. Then I had to stay back in Delhi for nearly 2 months. She was there. Then the day we came back here, that day she left for Nairobi. And then again within 7 days, Nutan Swamiji was going to USA last year. That is the story of last year. Again within 7 days, she flew to America to be serving him.
See, I don't know how many of you women are so blessed as Mala is to have such a husband. See, every time she comes by air, it requires a lot of money. She will not take money from us. And such a good husband. What greater fortune should a person have? You think about it. It is one thing to have money. It is another thing to use it liberally.
No, actually, last March, April, last year, between April and May, she was there for 2 months with me. Then immediately she went to America to be with Nutan Swamiji, serving him, came back. Then in August, Swamiji and me, we went to America. She came along with us, then came back. In November, she turned back, and within few days, she came to Delhi again to be in Delhi CIRD, serving Swamiji. Then after that, in March and April, like this she had been traveling.
And what is this serving? Preparing primarily food and serving. All the others will say, what? We want to listen to Swamiji. They will not miss, they cannot miss satsanga. They are not happy. See, when you go to Vaikuntha, how long will you look at Mahavishnu and sit there? After some time you have to think, what is the work that I can do in for Mahavishnu in Vaikuntha? And I will fulfill a work rather than looking at him, looking at him, looking at him. How long will you look at him? So people have to be very, very sensitive, good-hearted, very liberal. This is called devotion. In our devotional text you will find so many virtues and excellences incorporated as part of devotional personality. This is the person whom I like, says Krishna. I am simply amazed. This Sridhar, Mala's husband, how many times he comes and goes? And flying all the way, how many hours flight, Nairobi?
9 hours.
Then suppose she goes to US, that is long trip. See, to have a mind to do so, to have the resources to do so, to be able to liberally use them, and to have a beautiful and willing concurrence from the husband, inspiration. It is not easy at all. I think this is called the blessing of human life. They have one son who is in Hong Kong.
Doctor.
He is a doctor, and doctor, young doctor, who is doing extremely well. What is he doing now? He has taken his FRCS also?
He is in pathology.
Huh?
He is a pathologist.
Pathology also, there is something. He was doing some London qualification.
He
is also a very extraordinarily good, nice and indifferent boy.
Rice packing is there. Rice packing.
Rice packing, we need not be afraid. They have already packed 5,000. Theek hai? Prabuddham vimuktam vikaryadihinam prasannam sadanitya bodhaswarubam param nishalam nirgunam sarvarubam bhadeham sadanusmarami pranavami. Prabuddham vimuktam vikaradihinam prasannam sadanitya bodhaswarubam param nishalam nirgunam sarvarubam bhadeham sadanusmarami pranavami.